Chapter 14. Anxiety fluttered through Kelsey as she approached her old home. The sight of the rusted, warped gatepost made her queasy. Her feet rocked as she walked between cracked paving slabs and dirt-filled rectangles to the door. In the 2 years she'd been there, the doorbell had never worked, so she knocked 3 times, then leaped back. Her foster mother had a habit of opening the door and stepping through it in one fight-ready motion. Being a woman of some size, this often meant a swift ejection for whoever was calling. The raging bull failed to materialize, so Kelsey knocked again, calling out as she rooted around for the spare key. It wasn't in the usual spot under the mat. Beside the mat were 3 unopened milk bottles warming in the midday sun. Weird. She moved them to the shady side of the porch. Kelsey headed around the side of the house, past the broken basement windows to the open back door. The kitchen stank of empty beer cans and rotting cat food. The couple weren't allowed to keep pets anymore, but her stepfather insisted on leaving out open tins to lure neighbors' pets. He would then lavish them with attention until his partner chased both him and the cats away. So no pets, unless you count roaches and rodents. Kelsey picked her way through empty pizza boxes and soiled clothing, calling out as she went. The last thing she wanted was to startle 2 sleeping giants, especially if they were sleeping off hangovers. Their bedroom was deserted. The duvet was so stained it almost looked like leopard print. Cheap trinkets and sugary snacks sat in overflowing grocery bags at the foot of the bed. Sunlight filtered through the violet curtains, which had such a low thread count, they acted more like mood lights. The living room was deserted, too. Kelsey checked the census on the wall, and it confirmed they were both out. She heaved a sigh of relief. Looking closer, someone had replaced her name plaque with a guest space. Much as she hated this place, it hurt to be erased from it so quickly. Nervously, she entered her old room. Her sleeping bag lay sprawled across the dirty mattress she'd inherited. Her posters were still on the wall, and her school books piled up in the corner. Stooping down, she stuffed her clothes, makeup, and other items into bags she'd brought. It didn't take long to gather everything she owned into 3 modest sacks. Surveying her room for the last time, she felt a sadness at the life she'd tolerated for so long. As Kelsey stepped into the corridor, the front door banged open. Stacy, her rotund former foster mother, barged in. Her partner, Tony, was hobbling behind her, eclipsed from view.
"Damn it, Tony, quit whining about the liquor store."
"He humiliated me."
"You had no money, jackass. What was he supposed to do, give it away?"
"Damn right. I forgot my wallet is all. He knows I'm good for it."
"Oh, he knows all right. He knows exactly what you're good for."
Stacy stopped in her tracks, locking eyes with Kelsey.
"Where in hell's name are you going with all that?"
"I'm moving out. I came to get the rest of my stuff."
"No, kid. You already moved out. And that stuff ain't yours no more. It's mine."
A cry rang out from Tony's side of the hall.
"Shut that thing up already,"
yelled Stacy. She stormed off to the couch and grabbed soda, revealing Tony's twig-like figure by the entrance. Kelsey's mouth dropped. In her ex-foster father's arms were 2 swaddled babies. The cries of the first were rapidly spreading to its sibling.
"Now look what you've done," moaned Tony.
Between his fingertips were 2 crumbled white envelopes.
"What I've done?" yelled Stacy. "It wasn't my name on those letters, but here you are in my house, bringing me nothing but problems again."
Kelsey propped her bags against the wall and approached Tony, extending her arms. "May I?" His suspicion faded to relief as he foisted one of the crying babies onto Kelsey. She took the infant in her arms and rocked it, cooing.
"See? Gentle. Like this."
Tony watched with bewilderment, then copied her bobbing motion. To his astonishment, both babies settled down.
"Where will they sleep?" asked Kelsey.
The man looked anxiously to Stacy, who rolled her eyes.
"Don't look at me. They're your problem,"
she snorted. Tony led Kelsey through to the kitchen, carrying his baby like he had a sack of dynamite strapped to his chest.
"Would you?"
he said, tipping the second baby into her other arm. Kelsey accepted the infant, having little say in the matter, while he rummaged in the cupboards beneath the sink.
"I guess this'll do as a start,"
he mumbled. He pulled out two old cat's travel crates and laid them on the floor.
"Are you kidding me?" said Kelsey, disgusted.
"It's only temporary. They're soft. Look."
"How has this happened? You had all of yesterday to prepare. And don't say you didn't have money. I know they give you money when this happens," snapped Kelsey.
"I didn't ask for this, okay? I'm still getting my head around it. We tried, but we didn't have time to, you know, buy the things."
"Oh, but you had time for all this,"
said Kelsey, gesturing to the beer can strewed around them. She passed him each baby in turn, and he tenderly lowered them into the cat crates. Kelsey then showed him how to make sure their swaddling was tight enough.
"They kind of look like me, don't you think?"
beamed Tony.
"Sure, I'm going to go now. Get it together, you hear me?"
Tony rubbed his arm.
"It's tricky, you know."
"Save it. When I come back here tomorrow, these children will have cribs, or I'm calling the police."
Kelsey grabbed her bags from the corridor and left the house, trying to shut out the sound of a fresh beer can being opened. Kelsey left the thrift shop looking like an altogether more mature woman. Discarding all of her old clothes in a part exchange for swanky businesswoman attire had felt particularly cathartic. She was done with that life, those people, and those patterns of behavior. It was time to stand on her own two feet. Thanks to a broken system, her childhood had existed only on paper, and 18 years later, it had expired in silence. She wasn't letting that happen again. Kelsey checked her hair and makeup in the washroom, surprising herself with her new guys. Gone were the Cleopatra eyes and scraped back hair. She combed it into a smart-looking side parting and let the locks hang above her shoulders. Wearing the suit her lawyer had provided, with a pastel green blouse from the thrift shop, she felt the part. She re-rehearsed all the advice that woman had given her about posture, tone, and signaling. It had served her well in the hearing, and might serve her well here. The receptionist was on the phone, but gave Kelsey a polite holding smile as she finished the conversation. Kelsey felt herself stand taller. This wasn't the reaction people used to give her.
"Are you here for the interview, ma'am?"
Yes. Yes, I am," said Kelsey, opportunistically.
"Ah, thank goodness. They were worried you weren't coming. This way."
She led Kelsey through the chrome turnstile and down a series of corridors. The complex was a lot bigger than it looked from the outside. Kelsey glimpsed a packed lecture hall as they walked. Rows of students paid attention to a middle-aged woman wearing a jumper that looked like a sack, beside a projector showing schematics of what appeared to be boiler tanks.
"Take a seat in here. The panel will be through shortly. Do help yourself to water from the side,"
said the receptionist, taking her leave. Kelsey crossed over to the crystal decanter and poured herself some mint-infused water. It was better than any she'd tasted before. She looked at the bottle in astonishment, necked her first glass, then poured another, and inspected the meeting room. Sepia photos of babies hung across the walls in mahogany frames. Some were asleep, some wide-eyed and inquisitive, others laughing. Her gaze lingered on the last photo, an overjoyed couple receiving their first child from the ministry. She stared at it, unable to look away. The smiles on their faces looked so perfect, the creases around their eyes so genuine. A secondary door opened, and a man in a white lab coat beckoned her through.
"Dr. Santos, we're so pleased you could make it. Of course, there's no need for the usual formalities. Your CV really speaks for itself. We thought we'd just cut to the practical demonstration, given our time constraints. This is my colleague, Professor Hesley. She heads up the research division here."
Before Kelsey could intervene, the woman was enthusiastically shaking her hand.
"Wonderful to meet you. Wonderful to meet you. Your paper on refined pleuropotency was exceptional. We just had to get you in. I trust the voyage wasn't too challenging. I hear it can be rough at this time of year."
No, it was fine," said Kelsey.
Her eyes moved to the equipment in the center of the room. A thick clay bowl wider than her arm span sat on a wooden worktop. The bowl had two rims spaced 3 inches apart. The inner bowl was suspended on a cushion of black liquid. It held a lump of clay the size of Kelsey's torso. The interview room featured a glass wall overlooking a factory floor, where the identical setup was replicated dozens of times. Those clay bowls were suspended on large cast-iron tripods. Some were rotating above a flame, Others were being dunked in splash pools. Automatons and human technicians attended to them side by side, adding fluids and checking the readings on vast boilers and ventilation pipes that stood behind each clay bowl, rising 3 stories high.
"Please,"
said the woman, gesturing to the machine beside Kelsey. The machine started with an elevated desk chair, like those at a dentist. Nervously, Kelsey climbed in. Before her were 2 sets of gloves, connected to long levers protruding from the worktop. Kelsey slid her hands inside. To her surprise, metal discs lined the gloves, mirroring the articulations of her joints. She flexed her hands, jolting in shock as the ceiling above her moved. 2 brass-plated mechanical arms, each the size of her entire body, swung down from the roof and hovered above the clay. On one arm was a scalpel, on the other a spinning buffer.
"The pedals are beneath your feet," urged the man.
"Maybe her lamb has a different setup," whispered the woman.
Kelsey reached her foot out and tapped the pedal. The arms descended towards the clay with a pneumatic hiss. She fluttered, trying to reset her grip, but it amounted to a spasm. The scalpel sank into the clay while the buffer struck it like a hammer striking a raw egg. The clay crust ruptured, and a viscous pink-brown amalgam seeped out. Kelsey's foot jerked off the pedal as the haptic feedback startled her. The spinning buffer struck the bowl with a clang. A cupful of black liquid sloshed up, splattering the clay.
"What are you doing?"
cried the woman, hitting an emergency release button on the wall. A bell rang out in their chamber, and the machine jolted back from the table. Kelsey leaped down from the stool in fright as the mechanical arms retracted into the ceiling.
"That was insanely dangerous. Explain yourself."
2 automatons glided into the room. 1 set about siphoning the black fluid away from the clay, while the other tried to stem the seepage of pink-brown liquid. Kelsey glanced at the glass wall beside her. The human technicians dotted across the floor were staring on with concern.
"I think there's been a misunderstanding," said Kelsey.
The professor's anger was palpable. They paced the interview room, wringing their hands in deliberation while Kelsey sat in shame.
"We can't just let her leave. She's seen the assembly line. That's way above civilian clearance," hissed the man.
"How much do you know?"
snapped the woman.
"I know this is where the ministry handles fertility and child placements, but that's all I know, really. I came here to try and make a difference," said Kelsey, blushing.
"Oh, you've done that, all right," fumed the man. "If the ministry hears of this, all our necks will be on the line."
"What scientific qualifications do you have?"
asked the woman.
"Technically, none,"
began Kelsey. The woman groaned in despair.
"But I'm smart. I'm hardworking. I've just not had a good start in life. I'm trying to change that. Give me a chance," implored Kelsey.
"Like we have a choice. We need to do damage control fast," growled the man.
He stormed off, slamming the door behind him. Moments later, he appeared on the factory floor, taking charge of the cleanup operation.
"Here's the deal," said the woman. "You will keep your mouth shut. Tell anyone what you've seen and you will be prosecuted. If you promise never to do anything so reckless again, I'll take you on as a porter. But you'll need to get scientifically qualified fast. If our department's audited and you're on the books as you are, then the whole thing's blown."
"How do I do that? I got kicked out of school."
"Of course you did,"
said the woman, rolling her eyes.
"Hey, it wasn't my fault," protested Kelsey. "Sorry, I mean, I did want to finish my studies."
"Good. Then get yourself to night school. But take note, you'll need a referee, and it sure as hell can't be me."
The lights in the law offices were going out in quick succession. The firm was only small, so shutting up shop was a brief exercise for whoever was working late that night. Kelsey climbed off the tram and hurried across the street. Her former lawyer stepped out, locking the office behind her.
"Wait, Miss Hadley!"
"Kelsey?
Now isn't a good time. I'm running late."
"It'll only take a second. I need a reference for night school."
She handed over the form she'd collected. Val rummaged for her glasses, then tilted the form to capture the streetlight.
"This is not a simple request. The course requires me to act as a guarantor. If you fail to attend or fail to meet the pass mark, there are consequences for me, both financially and reputationally.
Kelsey blushed. She hadn't bothered reading the form.
That's crazy. Why would they punish the referees?
She protested.
Because night school is an opportunity and a limited resource. If they give a place to you, then someone else will miss out. This system ensures that the limited places only go to people who are serious about their studies.
If this is about my trial, I'm sorry I was rude to you. I was in a bad place.
I'm not after an apology. All I'm asking is if you know what you're taking on here.
Kelsey fidgeted with the hem of her blazer. Suddenly, the entire outfit felt ill-fitting.
I won't fail you, she said earnestly.
It says you want to study biochemistry?
I've got a temporary job at the Ministry of Fertility, but I need qualifications to stay.
Val raised her eyebrows.
Vacancies there are competitive. Congratulations. But I ask again, are you sure this is what you want? Night school is not like regular school. You can't bunk it off if you don't like the teacher, or skip classes if you don't feel like it. And when you do get there, you'll be tired. Studying after a full day's work is exhausting, particularly when you're learning a new job at the same time. You'll need to take a professional attitude to how you eat and sleep.
Kelsey snickered, then realized Val was serious.
When you say professional sleep,
I mean, build your life around a routine that facilitates your goals. Don't let anything get in the way. This is an opportunity to shape your future. But you'll be working twice as hard as everyone around you while you do it. You must plan everything. Meals, travel, having fresh work clothes ready each day. Expect your weekends to be life admin, homework, and sleep for the foreseeable future. Days will feel long and you'll need your friends for emotional support.
Kelsey cast her eyes downward. The only true friend she'd ever known was standing before her.
Kelsey, I have to ask again, is this really what you want?
When my parents abandoned me, there was supposed to be a safety net, a system to catch me. But I've been bounced between families, institutions, the streets, and back. I've been through 4 schools and 2 cities. I've been called the loner, the weirdo, the smelly kid, because my clothes were different, and the people looking after me didn't even know how to look after themselves. I was good at school, but even the teachers didn't think I belonged there. Today, I went back to my last foster home to get my things. My foster dad now has twins. Those 2 newborns are depending on that failure of a man for their entire future. They haven't got a chance. I can't stand by and watch what happened to me repeat itself across other generations. I'm joining the ministry so I can change the system from within.
Kelsey dabbed away a tear from the corner of her eye, while Val took a long, searching look at her.
There are many broken systems inside the ministry. When you fix fertility, maybe you can fix the rest.
Val signed the form, then hastened away towards a cab, wiping her cheek as she went.